Bruce, thank you very much indeed for that invitation and actually for the invitation to come today and present to you all. The talk is Minimising the Impact from Dynamic Vehicle Systems on Soil Conditions, and I've taken for this a number of examples from agriculture and military and other applications, so it's across the board. And we'll consider initially the effects of load and pressure, rut depths, soil pressures themselves, controlling traffic, evaluating compaction and repair strategies. So it's a quick across-the-board review of quite a lot of work which has been going on recently and some that went on quite some long time ago. I always start presentations like this by, come on in, Johnny, how are you doing? Thank you. By referring to the work of Zerner in the 50s, where he was looking at load and inflation pressures on soil compaction and the problems related there. I don't think the work has been beaten to date. And really the message that you get from Zerner's work is that pressure has the greatest influence on the degree of compaction, and load influences the depth to which that compaction resides. But in addition to the inflation pressure, the stiffness of the carcass of the tyre has quite a significant effect. Some of that work was done earlier by Bill Chancellor at Davis and Chris Plackett at Silso Research Institute. But just recently, Paula Misselvich, working with me at Cranfield, has developed a technique using the TechScan method of pressure mapping. And from that, we can see that for a rear tyre of a combine, the carcass stiffness effect, where the pressure underneath the tyre is about half a bar higher than that of the inflation pressure itself. So it gives a pretty good indication of carcass stiffness, and we've done that for a range of tyres. We're also looking for a quick and dirty way of doing it, and so I went back with Anne Dane Owens looking at some of the data from tyre manufacturers and started plotting that data from their catalogues of load against inflation pressure, and you can track that back and extrapolate that beyond the zero inflation pressure line to get a point where the red dot is, which is around about 0.65 of a bar. So if you want a quick dirty way of doing it, we were getting fairly good correlations using this approach. The other thing that came from Paula's work was the effect that when we would put the pressure matting at different depths within the soil, we worked out that the area of under pressure reduced linearly with depth rather than to the square of depth. As a result of that, we find that there was a hyperbolic function, and you can calculate the pressures quite nicely, and they drop almost exactly in the same way as the recorded data. Hence, we mean that for a lot of work, we need to improve our ground pressures, reduce inflation pressures. In agriculture, beginning to think about central tyre inflation pressure systems in order that we can bring tyre pressures down in the field. Often, many machines like the sugar beet harvester you see there has to move from field to field and travel on quite a lot of road. And as a result, the operators keep the pressures high. They don't reduce them down because of the operational time involved when they're working in the field. But there's a move coming through those machines and in pea harvesters and things like it to set central tyre inflation pressure systems. More recent work by Dirk Ansorg and myself have for Class Company. If you were looking at combines in the States, you'd see them branded with Caterpillar on them. And they were using the Cat Tracks. They cost not very much extra per hectare or per acre over the working life of the machine and give a lot of advantages. And Helmut Klass was very keen on us making some comparisons between the two systems. So we set things up in the laboratory for detailed studies of soil deformation and compaction. This included having the track and running the track at a higher load than the tyre, because the track itself weighs a couple of tons more than the tyre would do. And we measured deformation within the soil bin by tracking talcum powder marks. Dirt really loved this job. And as a result of that, we were able to get the vectors you see there, and the length of the vector looks at tyre displacement and track displacement, and you can see the tyres are much greater. When we put that through onto a graph, we just turn it through the other through 90 degrees, we've got deformation on the top axis and depth as we go down the profile, and you can see that for a regular combine, which was 21 tonnes on the front axle and 9 tonnes on the rear, that we were getting something of the order of about 90 millimetres deformation at the surface, dropping to a few millimetres at 600 millimetres below the surface. The density change is inversely proportional to the slope of that line. So that's the conventional combine. Stick it on rubber tracks at the front and you get a very significant difference in deformation. The surface density is pretty much the same, but the depth to which compaction occurs is significantly reduced, or the severity of the compaction is significantly reduced. So that's one way of taking the same vehicle out with the same mass or slightly increased mass and reducing compaction. If we compared it with an old system, there were a lot of people in Europe at the time banging the drum saying we should all go back to small vehicles. So we went back to the combine of the 1970s, the Class Dominator, which only weighed 11 tonnes, and using the tyres and the inflation pressures prescribed, we can actually see that that tracks almost exactly the same way as the rubber track does now. So we can see the advantages of the rubber track. If we could make our vehicles even lighter, we could get improved benefits. The alternative one also shown there was effectively running the three wheels, each loaded at 5 tonnes. And there is there a slight benefit, certainly at the surface, over the rubber track. The other benefits of using this is the cost of repair, or the energy cost of repair. And so if we look at the subsoiler, or the loosening time draft force against depth, the top line here is following the tyres, the bottom line here is following the tracks, and because this, the damage after the tyres is occurring up to about 450 millimetres deep, it's going to take about 250 horsepower to rip out the damage. If you're following it with the tracks at a shallower subsoiling depth, we can talk about 88 horsepower. So a substantial reduction in power for repair after tracked work. Moving from that, but in a linked way, to rut depths, I was involved in some work for Airbus in terms of landing military aircraft on soil surfaces. And we, as part of that, we needed to estimate rut depth. So we went back to the classical Becker equations and found that they were not worth a great deal. The errors were far too big. And so Patel and I developed a new set of equations based on the general soil mechanics equation of Rees and Heterachi. And from that, we were able to get better predictions, not super accurate, but far better. But I had a much greater opportunity to play with this data in preparing this. And I looked at some of the material that Santa Marta obtained a couple of years ago from mobile irrigators and the rut depths that were caused by running those in dry soil and in saturated soil and soil at field capacity. And here at the bottom, as you can see, the two solid lines at the base are the predictions from the Becker equation, which was not particularly effective. But using the revised general soil mechanics equation with a phi of 30 degrees, with the cohesion at field capacity equal to the soil moisture tension, and at the saturated condition, the cohesion equal to the hydrostatic pressure, we were able to get far better relationships between rut depths, predicted and experimental, for all three conditions. And that's just represented overall with that diagram of a one-to-one between predicted and experimental. Moving from that to the soil pressures exerted by a range of equipment. We can see here the representation for the rubber belted track, which is actually not uniform. When we got this information, we talked to the class company about it and said, well, I reckon you've got your weight distribution wrong because you could even that out. And they said, Dick, we started there. The trouble was we got bulldozing at the front end of the track if we didn't put the weight distribution slightly backwards. But it was useful in order to get information. So we used that with other vehicle systems, looking at road-going tyres, harvesters with tyres, harvesters with tracks, dual tractors, dual-tyre tractors, and a whole range of equipment to get good information. The worst problem of all was the road-going tyre. Only 5 tonnes, but inflated to 7 bars, and at 250 millimetre deep, still recording something of the order of 6.5 bar pressure on the soil. We took that to the field, and Anne Dane Owens conducted a lot of this work in the field, and you can see there where we've picked up the tractor tyres and then the systems of the tillage equipment in that Simba Solo cultivator. Very useful work was done there for looking at the pressures on buried archaeology, but it also tells us a lot about field systems for agriculture too. And she had 4 systems. We had a plow, a shallow plow, a non-inversion, very much the machine you just saw, and zero till. And the symbolic traces there tell you about the pressure distributions in the soil. But taking all of the systems together, what we were able to find was that zero tills do have a lower surface pressure or subsurface pressure at 250 over the other systems, but it's not significantly low. It's significantly lower, but in practice not hugely different. But it tells a very useful overall story as far as systems are concerned. My long-time colleague Tim Chaiman has been working on controlled traffic systems. It was systems that came from the States and from Britain, migrated to Australia. The Australians have made a great success of it, especially for wheat growing, where they keep their tyres in exactly the same place, operation after operation after operation. It's a very simple concept, but it does require standardising wheel centres, and you ideally want to have your wheels as far apart, which doesn't fit nicely into European agriculture. It does for very broad acre agriculture in the US and Australia and Brazil. However, from that and other studies that have been done, the system tends to record somewhere between 10 to 15% higher yields over those where there is no control of traffic and we have random traffic. So we need to know about compaction, we need to reduce it as much as possible. We also need to find ways of being able to sense where it's present or not. And another student of mine, Joseph Krajko, looked at 4 different systems, the standard penetrometer. He used a compaction sensor, which was a series of flaps on the leg of a subsoiler tine, with a strain gauge behind those flaps, so he was picking up pressures at different depths in the profile, and 2 electrical resistance or conductance meters, the conductometer, which was very much the same as the Veris that you find here, and EM38 from Geonix. And because you can never make compaction when you want it, what we did was to take a field that was compacted and remove it to 2 different depths. So we took off 30 centimetres of compaction for one and 60 centimetres of compaction for the other. So we ended up with a nice experimental design, able to run through all of those subplots with the equipment, those 4 systems. And you can see there are difference in mean penetration resistance for the 3 treatments, difference for the soil compaction sensor, differences for the conductor meter. And as a result, the penetrometer and the soil compaction sensor have the greatest resolution and reliability, but one has a lot of labour and the other one a lot of energy. The conductor meter has lower power requirements and can distinguish between the two. EM38 can be used, but it doesn't quite have the resolution of the Veris conductor meter type. And so, pulling things together towards the end, how are we going to manage the compaction that we've got if we have it? Well, my colleague Gordon Spore and I have spent a lot of time over many years messing around with this, and we always tried to get out 5 years after we got in, but we're still at it, as Johnny will contest. But for control traffic systems, then general loosening is a very sensible way of doing it, and the equipment is there in order to be able to do it, keeping the hardened traffic lanes in place. Where we have the wheel marks, then there's no problems in identifying those wheel marks and running tines in that zone just to loosen that particular part. Where we anticipate heavy loads, we may still want to do some loosening, but this general overall loosening that you get with wings, it's so vulnerable to recompaction. Where if we just take a simple tine with a foot on the bottom, no wings, work it very deep, we produce slots with 45 degree cracks running into them. And that's actually much, much stronger than a general loosened mass. So there are ways of trying to get some cracking into the soil without there being a problem. And if you're going to start to grow wide-spaced row crops, again, you can use that technique, especially if you've got GPS to be able to put the crop immediately back onto that area. So, ladies and gentlemen, in conclusion, the recommendations that we have is that still we should be working with manufacturers to reduce vehicle weights by the use of new materials and design procedures. We still ought to push those contact pressures down, try to make sure we've got the best tyre or track system in order to do it. The wheel system should be designed in an attempt to more evenly distribute the load. Had a big discussion with Helmut Klass as to why does he build a combine with 1 1/4 axles, and why not 2 axles or 3 axles in order to do it. He never considered it. Field traffic should be controlled to given lanes where you possibly can, and target your damage to soil structure using the techniques which we've shown. I think, Bruce, that brings me to the end, and thank you very much for your attention. On over there first, and then...
You can.
There's no reason why you can't do that.
And is it connected to some kind of like sensor that tells you what part of the field you need to change it, or is it?
I don't see any reason why it couldn't be linked to anything that you wanted it to do, whether it was going from the field to the road, or from a growing area of the field to a traffic lane, a roadway within the field, then I don't see any reason why that can't happen. It's just a question of putting a bit of money in the technology development. At the moment, the operator has to press the button, and he or she may have to wait a few minutes for the inflation pressure to come up or go down.
I have a question about the farmers. You said that their combines need to be taken from the fields across the extensive road system to go to other fields. Lower the tire pressure. And with the track vehicles or tracked harvesters that they have nowadays, how are those able to go on roads?
They can go on roads without any problems at all.
And the farmers don't have any problems?
Nope. The figures that would come from Klass would say that where their combines have a rubber tracked option, 70% are sold with rubber tracks. Now, I like to think that that's all down to the farmers being really keen on minimising compaction. But what it is in a European environment, and certainly a British environment, is the roads are very narrow and the gateways are narrow. And so they've got better manoeuvrability. Just the size of the vehicle gets them through. And I said, well, I don't care why the bloody hell you buy them. Just keep buying them. That's the important message.
Are they cost-effective? Are they more than conventional tires?
They would, as they are more, as I said there, they would cost about 50 cents an acre over the life of the vehicle.
Oh, okay.
So they're about $30,000 extra,
right,
as an option on the comp, but they wear longer. That they hardly ever wear out in the economic life. That, you know, the first owner. I don't know any farmer that goes and gets another set of tracks for his combine. And probably you could go through a second and a third owner. They haven't got that far almost yet. So they give great manoeuvrability. They give the benefits of reduced compaction in the field. The only problems that have been picked up are where we end up with a wet harvest. You might say, well, that's great, they'd be good in a wet harvest, as long as you don't have a hillside. And the combines were good because they would create a rut, and that gave you the operators lateral stability. And so the combines sat in the rut and were able to go around the edge of the hill. Put them on the tracks and they slip down. So they need some form of stabilisation with it in order to avoid that being a problem. But other than that, they've been a very good success.
A question and a comment. At the very beginning when you were talking about the rear tyres, I assume they were not driven. They were just bogies.
On the combines. They're not driven. They are not driven. They're just.
Some of them are.
Some of them are. These were not. They just sit there to stop the back end from falling over, effectively.
Well, my comment is, about 25 years ago, in the Midwest, they had terrible rains just before maize harvest. And instead of just sitting there, a lot of people went down to the south, bought sets of tracks from rice harvesters,
yes,
brought them back and installed them. At that time, they were about $12,000 a set, but they then harvested $100,000 worth of grain that was otherwise lost.
Yes. Yeah. So I don't know whether Class offer those as the rubber tracks as an option in the US or not. Caterpillar.
Well, Caterpillar
is... I mean, the whole thing came from Caterpillar in the first place.
Their tractors, they have rubber tracks.
They have rubber tractors. Tracks, yeah, yes, yeah.
But I don't know about the combines. I haven't seen any.
We're about at the time, actually, we're running on a couple minutes late, so I'm going to thank Dick for your presentation.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Yes.